This ceremony was officiated by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmn.org. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, everyone. So this morning we're doing a Jikai ceremony. Jikai literally means receiving the Kai or the precepts, the moral teachings of. So a special welcome to family and friends who have come and who are at home joining us. In the taking of vows, it's a very personal matter for those students who will be receiving these vows this morning, but it's also really essential that it be happening together, and that the whole Sangha be coming together and not only witnessing this, but actually being actively involved in it. Like any liturgy, whatever the focus of that liturgy is, because in Buddhism it's always about human life, human consciousness, human experience, human suffering, even if for people who are not Buddhist, it's always speaking to something which is fundamentally human. And so in that way, hopefully, this ceremony this morning will have something to say to everyone. The Buddha, in his enlightenment, realized that we are profoundly moral beings, that we move towards life and we move away from the destruction of life until we get confused. And then that can become confused. And so we witness so much of the suffering that we create in our world because of that confusion. And the Buddha understood that this fundamentally moral impulse that we have towards good, when confused with, leads to attachments to things in ways that become very binding, that leads to the generation of all kinds of mental and emotional states. We speak of them as the afflictions, afflictive emotions and mental states, then sort of rationalizes and makes logical actions that are actually not only contrary to the well-being of others, but also to ourselves. So the very actor of those actions and words and thoughts, because the Buddha realized all of that creates karma, all of those have consequence, that may be injurious to ourselves and others in the moment that we're committing those actions makes sense. And that's how what we might view as irrational actions, egregious actions, have a logic to them within the mind of the actor, which is one of the reasons why it's so difficult to free ourselves of those views and those impulses, because within that world that we create within ourselves, they make sense. And it's also why it's so difficult to change another's mind. Master Dogen said that to change the human mind is the most difficult thing, even though the mind is nothing but change. And so the receiving of these bodhisattva precepts, the bodhisattva is a great being who dedicates themselves to the well-being of oneself and others, is both a very solemn occasion, in a sense, not severe, not heavy, but serious, because the taking of vows within a Buddhist understanding is a serious matter, because we are committing ourselves to doing something. And in that, we're doing that publicly, you are doing that publicly, and in doing that, you are holding yourself accountable to these vows. And we also hold each other accountable. And those have every day, every moment, implications that are in alignment with how you want to be living your lives. It is also a joyous occasion for the very same reason, because you are taking those vows. So whenever anyone, anywhere, for any reason, makes a commitment that is dedicated to the well-being of others, that's a good day. And so we'll begin with a series of bows, recognizing the various lineages or streams that are making this possible. So first, to recognize our land ancestors, the Munsee, Mohican, and Lenape tribes who lived in this area on these lands until they were forcibly removed, that we have a debt to. And so in terms of the bows, first the recipients will bow to the Buddha, our original teacher, in recognition of how this path of Buddha Dharma began with the Buddha's leaving home and path and enlightenment and then many years of teaching, and placing in a very central place these teachings on morality. The Buddha said that in this path of Buddhism, that living a moral life, cultivating compassion, calming the turbulent winds of the mind, and gaining direct insight into the real nature of things were the three essential aspects of the path. And so he said that it's not actually possible to practice Dharma, to liberate oneself, to be of service to others in the most complete sense, fulfilling our potential as human beings, without a very grounded, solid grounding in the moral teachings. Next, you will make bows to your parents if they're here, or they'll go into the Buddha hall and bow in the direction of their parents, whether they're living or deceased. And this is to acknowledge their blood lineage, how they've arrived in this world through the actions of their parents, the gift of life of their parents. And the final set of vows will be made to the Kaishi, the preceptor, giving these vows today, which is in this today's case is myself. One of the things that's very important to understand about the Buddhist teachings on morality is that they're based in the realization of emptiness, of self and other. So they're based in the selflessness that is the essential nature of each of you and of all things and of the precepts themselves. And so that nothing has any intrinsic ultimate existence apart from causes and conditions that help to bring that into existence. But even in the moment of its existence, it's impermanent, it's in a constant state of change. And so it's not fixed. So these teachings, as important as they are in a sense even more important because they are not fixed. And so in that way, they are not a set of bound rules or fixed rules. We've all seen how moral teachings can, when we attach to them, when they become solidified and fixed in people's minds, they become dogma. And when they become dogmatic, they become dangerous. So moral teachings, which are about the welfare of others, oddly, can become sort of the basis of causing harm for others. And so in any moral teaching, particularly in Buddhism, there's this very strong recognition that the moment that we are purportedly practicing a moral teaching or the precepts, that is causing someone harm, that is not necessary, that we are actually wandering away, we're moving away from those teachings, and we're actually practicing something else. So we'll now do the invocation of the three treasures, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And Buddha here represents the Buddha Shakyamuni, represents all enlightened beings that have come down to us and have brought this tradition down to us. But because the Buddha realized Buddha nature as enlightened nature as existing in each of us, Buddha is also present within every human being. So the Buddha treasure incorporates all of those aspects. Dharma is the teaching of the Buddha and any enlightened being, but also because Dharma, the teachings are just pointing to the real nature of things. All things in the universe possess Dharma, are Dharma in that sense. So the Dharma treasure in that sense is also all-inclusive. Sangha is this Sangha, our community, it's all practitioners of Buddha Dharma. But because all beings have Buddha nature, Sangha also is all-inclusive. So when we invoke the three treasures, in this case, we're really invoking all of those Buddhas and ancestors who have come before us and bringing them into this hall. So because as in taking the precepts, you are entering into that line, that lineage of precept holders going all the way back to the Buddha. So I'll chant this three times, and if you, Shoki and Gassho. And everyone, please Gassho. Be one with the Buddha in the ten directions. Be one with the Dharma in the ten directions. Be one with the Sangha in the ten directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with the great compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Manjushri Bodhisattva. Be one with Koso Joyodashi. Be one with Taiso Josaidashi. Be one with the successive great ancestors. Be one with the Buddha in the ten directions. Be one with the Dharma in the ten directions. Be one with the Sangha in the ten directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with the great compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Manjushri Bodhisattva. Be one with Koso Joyodashi. Be one with Taiso Josaidashi. Be one with the successive great ancestors. Be one with the Buddha in the ten directions. Be one with the Dharma in the ten directions. Be one with the Sangha in the ten directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with the great compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Manjushri Bodhisattva. Be one with Koso Joyodashi. Be one with Taiso Josaidashi. Be one with the successive great ancestors. Okay. Koso Joyo and Taiso Josai are Ehe Dogen and Keizan Senji. So next we'll do the Gatha of Atonement. So in receiving these precepts, we strive to enter into these vows with a clear and open mind and heart. And so during our meetings together, we've talked about the essential aspect of taking responsibility for anything we've done in the past that has hurt anyone, caused injury, even those things we weren't even aware of, may not be aware of, as a way of turning towards and taking responsibility and recognizing that those arise out of impulses based in greed, anger, confusion, jealousy, pride, and so on. And that we commit those actions by thoughts, by words and actions. That's how powerful we are. That we all have access to those wheels of action that can cause harm, but can also bring about so much good. And in atoning, we take responsibility. Whatever the circumstances of those actions are, and sometimes we act under great adversity, under great pressure and stress, it leads us to take actions that are not so skillful that we might do otherwise in a different situation. But once that action has been committed by ourselves, then we have a responsibility because it's issued forth from this person. And so in taking responsibility and atoning, we actually empower ourselves to heal that injury internally and externally. And so we'll do this three times. Everyone is invited to join in this Gatha of Atonement, and we'll do it in call and echo. I'll chant and then everyone will respond. So Choki, everyone please Gassho. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all.
Now
evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. You know, human beings we're very resilient, and we tend to want to repair. And what's required for that is taking responsibility. How many times do we see people within our own lives, people in high positions, institutions, organizations, who if would only take responsibility, take ownership of an action, then a whole pathway opens up towards restoring, towards repairing, and which is what we want, right? Which is whatever, but it so often does not happen. So the power of taking responsibility. We tend to think sometimes that it will overwhelm us, and so we might shirk away from that, but actually it's just the opposite. But it takes a little courage. Sometimes it takes a lot of courage. This is shasui. It is a gesture indicating the unity of minds between all beings. Between Buddhas and deluded beings. It's really an expression of the mind that is transmitted, has been transmitted all through these ages. Bow. Just one bow. So now we begin, having prepared your mind in this space, we begin to receive the precepts. So we begin with the three treasures, with taking refuge in the three treasures, which is the oldest, one of the oldest teachings, one of the oldest practices. It was how the Buddha originally ordained people into the Sangha. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, I spoke of with the invocation. Taking refuge is to rely upon. Dogen says it is to unreservedly rely upon. And to understand Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, as I spoke about it earlier, but also fundamentally and essentially is your own body and mind. That what you are taking refuge in, what you are relying upon, is your own wisdom, is your own capacity to realize that wisdom, is your own basic goodness, your own compassion, and your deep, already present desire to live out of that compassion. And so I'll do this three times, and the second time we'll do it again in call and response. Please, Ashoki, and everyone, please, Gosho. And everyone is invited on the second repetition to take refuge. I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha, I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one, I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity, I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony, I have taken refuge in the Buddha, I have taken refuge in the Dharma, I have taken refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Buddha.
I take refuge in the Dharma.
I take refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity.
I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony.
I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the Buddha.
I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one. I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity. I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony. I have taken refuge in the Buddha. I have taken refuge in the Dharma. I have taken refuge in the Sangha. Will you maintain this?
I vow to take refuge in the three treasures.
Okay, do a bow. Just one bow, please. Next is the pure precepts. These pure precepts are very beautiful. They are so simple and not so easy to follow. They're the basis, the ground. They're how an enlightened being sees the world and endeavors to be in the world. They reach into every moment, every situation. They are utterly useful and they are profoundly formless. They need to be studied. Because they're so simple, we can pass by them, and as we've talked about, go right to the grave precepts. But these three teachings are very, very important. So please, take these in deeply. The first of the pure precepts is to not create evil. Evil only exists, and evil is a very strong word. It includes everything and anything, from the subtlest form of harm to the most egregious form of harm. And what it says, that what it tells us is that evil only comes into being when we create it. It doesn't exist in the world. It doesn't have any autonomous existence. It happens in our mind. And so the first pure precept is if we want to stop to alleviate suffering, we have to stop creating suffering. And that is a profound study. To not create evil. This is the abiding place of all Buddhas. This is the very source of all Buddhas. Will you maintain this?
Not create evil.
Okay. In the same vein, the second pure precept, practice good, is expressing the fact that there is no good that simply exists inherently. Buddhism does believe and sees, basically through evidence, that every living thing, not just humans, but every living thing, seeks life, affirms life. The flower turns towards the sun, right? And so practicing good doesn't exist inherently. Good doesn't exist inherently, but we can bring it into existence. We can bring it into our lives and the lives of others. And so practice good says to do that, to let that be a basic attitude, a basic way of being in the world. And it very clearly does not designate a time or a place or an object of that good, which frees you to just practice good in every way, in any direction, for anyone. Whether there's someone there or not, whether there's someone directly receiving it or not, it's just a different way of being in the world. Dogen said, this is the Dharma of Samyak Sambodhi. This is the way of all beings. Practice good. Will you maintain this?
I vow to practice good.
And the third of the pure precepts is to actualize good for others. That as you are in this world, not creating evil and practicing good, to ensure that the good that you bring into being is actualized, is made actual, it's made real for all of those around you. Dogen says, this is to transcend the profane and to be beyond the holy. It is to liberate oneself and others. Actualize good for others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize good for others.
You know, we can think of moral teachings as constraints, right? That they keep us from all the fun stuff, right? And what the Buddha said is that what these teachings do is they actually allow us to come into accord with ourselves. And that we are, when we are not living in accord with ourselves, that is the seat, that is the source of all of our regret, is the source of our deepest anguish and misery and unhappiness. And that when we seek in unskillful ways, these moral teachings recognize that there are many simple ways, many ordinary ways to enjoy life, to have pleasure and happiness. And it recognizes all of that. And that's much of, you know, the richness of our lives. But it also recognizes that all of those are impermanent. They're all passing by. They appear and then they're gone, they're never to return again. And that when we rely on those for the deeper yearning that we have to be fulfilled in this life, to be content and at peace with ourselves and others, we will never find satisfaction in that. And then we're not actually able to enjoy those ordinary everyday pleasures fully because we're seeking something from them that they cannot offer us. And so, in fact, the Buddha said to see into those pleasures that we are grasping at and that we are having unrealistic desires for, and see the danger that we have brought into them, into our understanding, our misunderstanding, our views. And so actually in that way, these precepts free us to enjoy our lives, to enjoy, have all of that richness and enjoyment and happiness in a way that is deep and broad. So the grave precepts help us to respond to the question of these pure precepts. How do I do this? How do I not create evil? What are the things that you need to pay particular attention to as a human being? What are those actions that show up in every human interaction throughout time, in all cultures, all times, that are the most injurious, that create the most binding karma, cause the most suffering? And how do we transform those? How do we shift those into compassion, into liberation, into well-being? And so the grave precepts help us to understand that. And during the week, we've been talking about these different perspectives. So as I said, these precepts are not fixed. And it's easy to just see them as rules on a page. And in that way, if we follow them literally, and that is one of the understandings of the precepts, but then there will be times where in following that precept that way, literally, we will actually cause harm. And so there's another understanding that out of compassion and reverence for life, sometimes we have to act in a way that seems contrary to that precept, but it's actually a more compassionate action. But the key is that it's not coming from a self-centered place. It's not for your benefit, but it's for the benefit of another. And then there are other perspectives that we looked at in terms of the fundamental nature of these precepts, which is that they're based in non-fixedness, non-abiding, that they are fundamentally empty, and therefore they can be so powerful. Okay, so keeping that in mind as we go through these. And also to bear in mind that these precepts are bringing our attention not just to the moment of an action, but to all of the mental energy, emotional energy, planning, strategizing, all of the energy that we put into that brings us to an action that is unskillful. And then the karmic consequences of that action, which we can't control. And so when we reduce an action to just one action, we're really ignoring the great breadth and depth that an action can have, that becomes the stuff of our life, either the stuff of our entanglement and our suffering, or is actually creating those conditions that are allowing us to live in a very different way. So the first of these precepts, of the great precepts, is to affirm life, to not kill. The Buddha realized that all life is life. And to love life, to want to affirm life, is our natural inclination. And that every creature exists within an intricate web that has its own function, its own role to play, and as do we. And that we all arise together in that way. We all depend upon each other. And so when we take a life, we are sort of tearing that fabric. We are taking away the opportunity for that life to fulfill its role in this vast web. And it's also recognizing that our basic nature is non-harming. No creature, Dogen says, falls short of its own completeness. It always covers its own ground. To not kill is to not harbor the mind of killing, of taking life. And so to live within a mind that is affirming of life. This is why when we eat and we do orioki, we have this very elaborate liturgy and teaching around the life that we are taking, and to do that very consciously, and to be aware that in doing that, we now have a commitment to returning life, giving life back. That's that web. That's how that web works. Dogen says, life is non-killing. The seed of Buddha grows continuously. Maintain the wisdom life of Buddha and do not kill life. Vow to affirm life. Do not kill. Will you maintain this?
I vow to affirm life. I will not kill.
And in this spirit of compassion and reverence for life, sometimes to take a life that is only suffering, to alleviate that suffering, may sometimes be necessary. The second great precept is to be giving, to not steal. So this speaks to our basic nature of generosity, that giving is life, and life is giving. That when without giving, when our lives are not sort of imbued with a sense of giving, then we stand in a kind of isolation. We become increasingly caught in a self-separated, self-created sense of separation. And that in giving, we both release, we give up, we let go of what we have to offer. But we also recognize our mutual codependence, how we rely on each other, depend upon each other. And so this precept is also about developing a non-grasping mind, to not seek contentment in taking things, power, titles, positions, but rather to cultivate a mind and a heart of generosity and find your satisfaction there. To not believe in the insufficiency or your own insufficiency, and to not seek from things what you can only find within yourself. Dogen says, the mind and all that is external are just thus, each abiding in its own way. The gate of liberation is open. Vow to be giving, do not steal. Will you maintain this?
I vow to be giving. I will not steal.
The third great precept is to honor the body, to not misuse sexuality. So Buddhism has profoundly studied desire, the nature of desire, that it is present within every living thing. In springtime, you see it everywhere, right? A great life force. When we cling to it, it becomes the source of unimaginable pain and sorrow and confusion. Freed of that attachment, it has the power to do unimaginable good. Bodhicitta is that desire turn towards what is profoundly good. Sexual desire is a very powerful force. It can destroy love. It can nurture and generate love. It can create deep wounds. It can heal wounds. To not separate the mind from the body from the person, do not separate yourself from another, to use all of the desires that arise within you to bring you closer to everything, to yourself, to your path, rather than to injure another. This precept is reminding us that no person is an idea or a projection or an object of our desire. And so in honoring the body, we really mean honor the whole person, the whole being, the whole miraculous universe. The three wheels, body, mouth, and mind, greed, anger, and delusion, are pure and clean. Nothing is desired. Go the same way as the Buddha. Vow to honor the whole person. Do not misuse sexuality. Will you maintain this?
I vow to honor the whole person. I will not misuse sexuality.
And that really just means any use of sexuality, internalized, acted upon, that is harmful, that is not skillful, not helpful. The next great precept is to manifest truth, to not lie. When we open our Dharma eye, we see that all things are true, that nothing exists in a state of deception, even deception itself. That falseness only exists in our mind. And that the way of Buddha Dharma is to see through all falseness and to live in the natural harmony that we possess. This vow is really about having courage to face what is true, and to be unafraid of truthfulness, and also to realize that truthfulness is based in compassion. And so sometimes out of compassion, reverence for life, we speak in ways that understand that, right? So that we don't adhere to this as a dogma, as a rule, and say things that might have basis in truth but aren't helping anyone. And so rather than turn away from what is real, to seek all that is true, and to really try and strive to live our lives in truthfulness, in honesty, to live lightly and with a straightforward mind and heart. The Dharma wheel unceasingly turns, and there is neither excess nor incompleteness. Sweet dew permeates the universe. Gain the essence and realize the truth. Vow to manifest truth. Do not lie. Will you maintain this?
I vow to manifest truth. I will not lie.
And all of these precepts should also be understood, not just in terms of our relationships with others, but relationships with the relationship we have with ourself. The next precept is to proceed clearly, to not cloud the mind. This is really recognizing your bright, clear Buddha mind, the mind of suchness that is miraculous in its awareness. And that when that becomes hidden, then everything appears dull and diminished. And what is easy becomes difficult. What is difficult can become overwhelming. And in that, we can seek to escape, find a way out. But there ultimately is no turning away from the self, which is why when we try and escape, it just hurts a little bit more. And so to encounter one's real self, the more we experience that, the less motivated we are, the less desire we have to try and escape. We realize that we're just creating an illusion for ourselves. And so everywhere you go, you find yourself. There is no other realm. For a practitioner, that actually is the good news. There is adversity. There is suffering. Life sometimes is very difficult. But to become numb only increases the pain. And so to cultivate and protect your clear, bright Buddha mind. This mind is originally clear and pure. Do not let it become cloudy. Do not let it be defiled. Vow to proceed clearly. Do not cloud the mind. Will you maintain this?
I vow to proceed clearly. I will not cloud the mind.
And that refers to any kind of intoxicant, which would cloud the mind, but also anything that we might use to numb or distract or cloud the mind could be understood with that precept. The next great precept is to see the perfection, to not speak of others' errors and faults. We're all Buddhas, perfect and complete. And as Suzuki Roshi said, we could also all use a little bit of work. And so how to have a great aspiration to realize that perfect nature, and at the same time, to allow our imperfections without anxiety. And to understand that they arise within us and they arise within others as a result of past actions, present distractedness, misaligned intentions. And so in a way, we shouldn't be surprised with the errors and faults of ourselves and others. They make sense in a certain way. And we need to take responsibility. And so to, as a community, to hold each other accountable and also to be forgiving. Without those two, we cannot, there is no Sangha. Right? There is no way we can move forward. That sense of otherness that we create in our mind through not practicing this precept, we create a stranger in others. And that is the form of every form of, that is in present in every form of anger, hatred, aggression, violence, oppression, every form of bias. And all of it is based on the fundamental delusion that there is a fundamental difference between self and other. Where is the distinction? We see, we need to see, that ultimately we all have one nature. Dogen said, in the midst of the Buddha Dharma, we are the same way, the same Dharma, the same realization, the same practice. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Do not destroy the way. Vow to see the perfection. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Will you maintain this?
I vow to see the perfection. I will not speak of others' errors and faults.
And because in our lives we need to be able to do that, as parents, as friends, as teachers, in work situations, in training. And so when we need to speak of another errors and faults, it should be based in compassion, only in service to help, to bring about some good. The next precept is to realize the self and other as one, to not elevate the self and blame others. The sense of self is a self-creation of a self-grasping mind. In every moment, there's just this moment of birth and death. There is no one to build up. There is no one to tear down. There is no high and low fundamentally in the way. Out of skillfulness, out of social agreement, we can create ranks and positions and titles. We do that within a Sangha. But from the Bodhisattva perspective, we should only do that when it is skillful towards helping us to realize our nature, to bring forth compassion, to serve another, to bring forth some good. When there is no self-clinging, then we ourselves are no longer controlled by praise and blame. Every person is complete, self-fulfilling in their own virtue. Nothing exists within another that does not exist within ourselves. If we don't believe that to be true, we should look a little harder. And so this is about profoundly trusting in yourself and others. Buddhas and ancestors realize the absolute emptiness and realize the whole earth. When the great body is manifested, there is no inside or outside. When the Dharma body is manifested, there's no square inch of earth upon which you can stand. Vow to realize self and others one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to realize self and other as one. I will not elevate the self and blame others.
As the faith mind says, when you make the slightest distinction, we separate heaven and earth. And so, again, when making distinctions, we only do so to bring about something good. And understand that it doesn't exist inherently. The eighth great precept is to give generously, to not be withholding. So there's the precept on not taking what does belong to you, what does not belong to you. Here the precept is saying that in every moment, we all have something to offer, always, always. And this precept is about not withholding that, no matter how small, no matter how simple. To be withholding creates a cycle of confinement and anxiety. It further creates that sense of confinement within a sense of self and division between ourselves and other. When we give and are generous, it frees us from that story of not having enough. We see that it's much better to live simply and deeply than to be burdened with what we treasure too much. To hold on to something is to have already lost it. To let go is to move in accord with the things. And then a blade of grass, a word, a glance, a gesture has the power to heal and transform. So let your whole life be one generosity. Dogen says, one phrase, one verse, 10,000 forms, 100 grasses, one dharma, one realization, all Buddhas, all ancestors. Since the beginning, there has never been anything to withhold. Vow to give generously. Do not be withholding. Will you maintain this?
I vow to give generously. I will not be withholding.
It's interesting that in every study I've ever read about, in any, from any field that is about happiness, that basic way of being in the world is always a key factor to give. The next great precept is to actualize harmony, to not be angry. Anger only arises within us because we already have the seeds of anger from the past. So we all have the capacity for anger. It's not something that someone can cause in us, give to us. We can be in conditions that make it very easy for it to rise, but the anger itself belongs to each of us within our mind. Anger is a power. It's a force. It can be like a burning fire. It can burn a house down. But if we use it well, if you think of it as a powerful energy, without self-clinging, it can be like thunder that calls attention, that precipitates change, that calls people to in, that brings forth a compassionate response, when it's not based in self-centeredness. To live within anger. And anger here is the whole realm of aversion. So we talked about the very subtle forms of irritation, annoyance, impatience, frustration. All those subtle things that we live with all the time and pass by and hardly notice and think, well, that's just what life is about. It's all created. The Bodhisattva is earnest about wanting to liberate ourselves and others from this anger. To not be afraid in encountering anger within yourself and others, to make a move, and to realize that accepting anger is not passive, is not inaction, but it's actually the first step forward. And so this precept is really a training precept, as they all are, but to really learn how do we encounter anger within ourselves and others. Because when we suppress it, it just gets stronger. We've seen too many examples of that. When we act it out, we've seen too many examples of that. What is the middle way? Practice not being angry. Practice this precept in the moment when you're angry. That's compassion. It may not feel like it to you in that moment, but it is. It is not regressing. It is not advancing. It is not real. It is not unreal. There is an illuminated cloud ocean. There's an ornamented cloud ocean. Vow to actualize harmony. Do not be angry. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize harmony. I will not be angry.
And the last of the great precepts is to experience the intimacy of things. Do not defile the three treasures. So you began by receiving the three treasures as the first of the precepts. And now it's very important precept to not defile the three treasures, which means really to not stand outside, to realize them as your own body and mind, to realize them as the source of all that you need to live this life that you are committing to. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are your very body and mind. They're the heart essence of all beings, Buddhist or non-Buddhist. They're what brings the precepts, these moral teachings, into the house of Buddha Dharma, into the Eightfold Path, into liberation. When we turn against the three treasures, which we talked about this, right? It always happens in a moment of anger, frustration, where we are seeking something to blame. Then we're turning against not only our spiritual home, but against our own mind. And so that's the moment when you want to turn back, take refuge, come back in, and resolve, work on whatever is happening from within this commitment that you're making. Living the Dharma with the whole body and mind is the heart of wisdom and compassion. All virtues return to the ocean of reality. You should not comment on them. This is not a philosophy. This is not theoretical, Dogen is saying. Don't comment on them. Practice them. Realize them. Actualize them. Experience the intimacy of things. Do not defile the three treasures. Will you maintain this?
I vow to experience the intimacy of things. I will not defile the three treasures.
These 16 precepts, the three treasures, the three pure precepts, and the 10 grave precepts, were handed down by Shakyamuni Buddha generation after generation to my teacher, to me, and now I give them to you. Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you really maintain them well?
I will.
Okay. Three bows. Buddhism is a practice tradition. It's a path. And so everything we do, every teaching, no matter how intellectual or difficult it may seem or how difficult it may be to relate to in terms of how does this teaching me or relating to my life, is just not yet clear. All of Buddhism exists for the purpose of bringing it into the path, into practice, because that's where it becomes alive and living and real and has the power then to affect change. Lean forward a little bit. The Buddha's robe. A list of the ancestors. I'm going to read an acknowledgement of your having received the Bodhisattva precepts, and I'll read this in full for you, and then I'll abbreviate it for all of you, but to know that it's the same. Mountains and Rivers Order, Doshinji. This is to certify that Richard Hubbard, having fulfilled the precepts training requirements of Zen Mountain Monastery and the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on the 17th day of April, 2022, received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Renin, Kodoshugen Preceptor. Lean forward. Okay. Listen to the ancestors. This is to confirm that Michelle Lara has received the Bodhisattva precepts on the 17th day of May and has been given the Dharma name Seizan. The Roksu is a, every morning at the end of our morning meditation, we chant a verse, vast is a robe of liberation, a formless field of benefaction. I wear the Tathagata, the Buddha's teaching, saving all sentient beings. And for the lay student, and for the monastic, but for the lay student, this is this vast robe of liberation. The Buddha's robe. Ketchmiyaku. This is to confirm that Mark Taylor has on this day, 17th day of April 2022, received the Bodhisattva precepts and has been given the Dharma name Chiho. This is to confirm that Tom Kaplan has received the 16 Bodhisattva precepts of the Buddha Way on the 17th day of April and has been given the Dharma name Yugaku. List of the ancestors. This is to confirm that Rebecca Kish, on this 17th day of April, 2022, has received the 16 precepts of the Bodhisattva path and has been given the Dharma name Shindo. This is to confirm that Daniel Latore, on the 17th day of April, has received the 16 precepts of the Bodhisattva path and has been given the Dharma name Onren. Kneeling. Would everyone please gassho? When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. truly they are the children of the Buddha. Okay. And now the Jishu is going to lead these new bodhisattvas around the Zendo in a walking bow so that all of you can return that bow and offer your affirmation of their receiving these precepts. And so in this way, the whole Sangha is giving the precepts. Sit down, take a seat. Let me say a little bit about your names. So in many religious traditions, there's the giving of a spiritual name. And we use the Chinese characters, our tradition having tracing its way back to India, but having come into being as a distinct tradition in China. So we use the Chinese characters, which have a richness of meaning. So in choosing these names for each of you, you know, and thinking about you and your practice and what would be helpful, the strengths that you each possess, the directions that you're going in, these names are a reflection of that. So Richard Renan. Ren, the first character, means pure, honest, and true intention. So pure intention. The Buddha realized the profound nature of our intentions, a desire based in a view, based in some way of seeing ourselves and others, is a very powerful force because it leads us into speech and action, and we are creating karma. And so to raise bodhicitta, to cultivate right intention, essential part of the Eightfold Path, is what really, it's a power that we begin to understand more and more, and we realize how we can use this and practice this and cultivate this in a way that has tremendous potential. But it needs to be true. It needs to be based in what is actually true and in accord with the real nature of things. Ultimately, to be in accord with the Dharma and your nature. Nin is patience. The patience, of the paramita of patience, which is not waiting, it is not passive. It works with things, the nature of things, time, conditions, you, others. Sometimes it has the quality of forbearance. Sometimes patience is to hold something that is difficult to hold because it must be. But to do that knowingly, to do that with an openness, with a wisdom, that then becomes the potential for moving forward. Patience is non-aggression. It is trusting the real nature of things. It is working with the real nature of things rather than against. And as I said, it includes that quality of forbearance. Compassion is based in selfless patience, and that allows us to stand, to sit, to leap, to serve. So Renin is pure or true patience. Michelle, your name, Seisan. In the character San, I'll get to, but it's pronounced Zan, Seisan, okay? Se means quiet, calm, peaceful. All things abide in this very state, in a state of a naturalness, which is a state of rest, a state of calm. A candle flame burns clear and bright and steady until a wind causes it to flicker. But even when it moves, the candle flame itself is undisturbed. No one has ever created an enlightened state of body or mind. No one has ever created a true and lasting peace. Peace is not created, although the conditions for peace can be created. Peace naturally is present when we don't create conflict, when we don't create division, don't create conflict. And so in a sense, practice is learning in a very profound way how to bring about the cessation of all the many ways that we turn against and create an altered state, we might say, from say. San is mountain, the sacred home of all Buddhas and ancestors, the place of your returning. Firmly rooted in the earth, reaching out in all directions, it is vast. It is always moving in accord with time and season. It moves in harmony with its environment. And within that movement, it is still. It is calm. Even within the midst of great forces, the mountain itself is not moving. And yet within its movement, it is still. And so Seizan is peaceful mountain. Master Dogen said, we should thoroughly study this peaceful mountain. When we thoroughly study the mountain, this is mountain training. And in this way, the mountain spontaneously becomes covered in peace. Seizan. Mark, your name, Jiho. Ji is a character for self, oneself, for this person. To study the way, Dogen said, is to study this very self in all of its aspects and manifestation. To study deeply into this vast universe that you call yourself. To study the way self is to study the mind, the body, the heart of yourself and others. Because we have a universal mind, we are not that different from each other. That's why these teachings from so long ago can be so contemporary. And so this means to make peace in the study of the self with what is not at peace, to see clearly what is hidden, to let go of what is bound, to go beyond that self that has an impulse to create and destroy, beyond friend and enemy, beyond all divisions into two. The self. To realize selflessness is not to go to not to try and eradicate the self. It can't be eradicated. It isn't that kind of thing. It is no kind of thing. But rather to be so at peace with that self that it's no longer deluding, no longer a source of grasping, no longer something that needs to be protected. Ho is to set free, to release. To be attached to things is illusion, we chanted this morning. When we don't understand clearly, Bodhidharma said, then everything that is actually true and complete within itself appears false and insufficient. Ho is to liberate, to set free, to release whatever appears caught. To realize, to set free the self is to liberate the bodies and minds of self and other in every thought, in every word, in every action. Now released, you can be more fully available to yourself and others. No hindrance in the mind. So Jiho, to set free, release the self. Tom, your name, Yugaku. Yu is courage. And courage arises from the heart. Courage has great heart. And so here, this you is that when there's fear, which is just a cloud arising in that moment, to meet that fear without love or hate, without retreating or advancing, to meet it as it is. Fear is just a particular kind of experience. When there's no hindrance in the mind, we chant, there is no fear. And to know fear, to study fear, is to know yourself. It is to know the real nature of thought, an idea. The bodhisattva path is a courageous one. The bodhisattva, him or herself, is not discouraged, is not fearful of our own suffering or the suffering of others. The Buddha said, when we encounter the Dharma, when you encounter the Dharma, as you have, and you don't turn away and retreat in fear, as you are showing that you are not by being here today, then that person is ready to encounter the Dharma. Gaku means to remember, to know clearly, to see and be enlightened by. And so this courage this you, when you forget, remember. When the world, when people, when situations, when the children that you teach, when greed, anger, delusion would seem to overwhelm you, remember your courage, remember your heart, remember your vows. Enlighten your fear by seeing into its impermanent nature, its illusory nature. Understand that all creation is mind. Remember your vows, turn the light around. Yugaku, to remember and know courage. Rebecca, Shindo. Shin is trust, faith, deep conviction. And this shin, this faith, comes from deep within. It is fundamentally human. It is a fundamentally spiritual thing. You can't measure it. You can't locate it. But all the good in life depends upon it. It is open. It is courageous. It is vulnerable. It is trusting. It is also smart. It has intelligence. It is alert. Faith itself requires and is nurtured by faith. Having faith, we generate more faith. Do is the way. It's the Do of Doshinji, the path. The great way is not difficult for those who have faith. We have, having faith, however much you have, is enough for this moment. Always know that. And having faith, now you practice. And now practicing, you verify that faith. You prove it to be true. You verify it, and that brings forth more faith, more confidence. Gaining confidence in your own ability to trust, to have faith, and to know to hold firm when you need to be steady, to let go when you need to let go. With each path, then you see that the path, with each step, then you see the path rises to meet you. This faith, this way, is not some place, it's not some thing. There are no promises, there are no guarantees. You don't need those. With faith, you don't need those. It is so much larger. And this faith cannot fail you because it's not outside of you. When we feel that it has betrayed us, it's because we have placed it outside of ourselves. Wherever you are, there it is. And when you trust the way and practice the way, you will see that the way has always trusted you. And Daniel, Onren. On means kindness, gratitude. It's the great heart, the great love of the Bodhisattva, of Avalokiteshvara. It is impartial by its very nature. It is boundless, free of expectations. It is wishing for the well-being of everyone and everything. It is also an expression of gratitude. They work together. Gratitude for this precious human life, for the Buddha Dharma, for the three treasures, for your vows. That every day you wake up in gratitude that you have this day to offer something. Go out into the day with that mind. How can you use this day for the benefit of others? Ren is the same Ren as in Renin. Pure, honest, right intention. To know what your path is. To be clear in your intention. To bring forth your aspiration. And then to be free of all expectations. To not hold on too tightly to anything. This is the most powerful force. And when Ren, this great aspiration, arises from On, from kindness and gratitude, this is the Bodhisattva way. So On Ren is true kindness, pure gratitude. So here you are. See what you've gotten yourself into. It's too late. Nothing to be done except going forward. You have entered into this profound implication of a vow. To live your life dedicated to service, to giving and receiving. It has to go both ways. To liberating self and other. It is non-dual. It has to go both ways. And to manifesting real wisdom, real compassion. And to do that within this rule of no rule. It is not rigid, but nor is it relativistic. It is not ambiguous or ambivalent. Sometimes, yes, it will not be clear. But that's all. It's just not yet clear. That's all. Make it clear. Become clear. These precepts have been given to you and received by you and witnessed by all of these noble friends. So in the presence of this Sangha, you have made vows committing yourself to practicing them. And you can do that. You are doing that. Never think that you or these vows are not workable. And in that way, you become a living link. You are a living link in this tradition that goes back to the Buddha of dignity, of mutual arising, of mutual respect, of compassion. And so in taking these vows, your practice and your life have changed in ways that you are somewhat aware of and yet to become aware of. And they will unfold in ways most unexpected as your life comes to you in unexpected ways. May they illuminate your life and the lives of others. May your life go well.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about our ongoing programs and residency opportunities, visit zmm.org.